Shaima Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Pura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Maya Pura Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sai Palesh Mitavakana Swami Tari Namasaya Saswati Devi Namatari Namasaya Saswati Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Utapada Kamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnava Mishcha Sri Rupam Sagraja Tamasagana Rabanatam Vitam Stamasajiva Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sagana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sucha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 June 27th, 2010, in Karlovac, Croatia, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Prayers by Queen Kunti, Text 41. And we're doing just a short class this morning, so short means till what time?
Until 9, with questions and everything.
I thought short was like 10 minutes. Seriously, until what time? Where's Mohan?
Mohan.
Mohan.
Mohan, how do you go?
But we'll do the verse, then he can tell us.
Mohan wanted dead or alive.
Yes.
Yes. You said short class. Short means until what time? Like 8:30?
No, it's normal. It can be normal. Because we changed something. It originally was very short, then we do some, but now it's normal class. It's like normal.
Like 10.
No, that was not normal.
Till nine. With the question, of course. And then we have a projection, some short movies, then you say something, and some of the disciples say something, and that's it.
Okay. Atavishvesha Vishatman.
Atavishvesha Vishatman.
Vishvamurte Swakeshume.
Vishvamurte Swakeshume.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Dridam Pandushu Vishnishu.
Dridam Pandushu Vishnishu.
Atavishvesa Vishvatman.
Atavishvesa Vishvatman.
Vishramurti Swakeshume.
Vishvamurti Swakeshume.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Dridam Pandushu Vishnishu.
Dridam Pandushu Vishnishu.
Atavishvesha Vishvatman.
Atavishvesha Vishvatman.
Vishvamurte
Svakeshume. Vishvamurte Svakeshume.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Vidham Pandushu Vishnishu.
Vidham Pandushu Vishnishu.
Atavishvesha Vishvatman.
Atavishvesha Vishvatman.
Vishvamurte Svakeshume.
Vishvamurte Svakeshume.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Vidham Pandushu Vishnishu.
Vidham Pandushu Vishnishu.
Atavishvesha Vishvatman.
Atavishvesha Vishvatman.
Vishvamurte Svakeshume.
Vishvamurte Svakeshume.
Sneha Pashani Mam Chindi.
Sneha Pashani Mam Chindi.
Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu.
Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu.
Ladies.
Atavishvesha. Vishvesha Vishvatman.
Atavishvesha Vishvatman.
Vishvamurte Svakeshume.
Vishvamurte Svakeshume.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Sneha Pashami Mam Chindi.
Dridam Pandu Shurishnishu.
Dridam Pandu Shurishnishu.
So, who can tell me what Vishvatman means? What's Vishva?
Universe.
Universe. Atma is?
Soul.
The soul of the universe. Vishvamurti. Vishva again means?
Universe.
Murti?
Form.
Okay. Form of the universe. Sneha. What is Sneha?
Sneha.
Does it mean something different in Croatian?
Yeah.
What does it mean in Croatian? A doctor? Daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Anybody know what it means in Sanskrit? Well, it's important, right? It means affection. And what is Pasha? We talked about yes, a rope. Do you remember how Banasura arrested Aniruddha with the Naga Pasha? The snake rope. So what's the Sneha Pasha?
A rope of love.
A rope of love, yes. Chindi. You know Chindi from the torturer Prahlad Maharaj? No? That's what the demons were saying to Prahlad. Chindi, Chindi. What do you think the demons were saying to Prahlad?
Die.
Die, die, yeah. They're saying, cut him, cut him. So Sneha Pasham Chindi would mean to?
Cut the rope.
Cut the rope of affection. And then Pandushu Rishnishu. To the Pandavas and the Vishnus. Okay, let's go through the word for word. Atta.
Atta.
Therefore.
Therefore.
Vishva Isha. O Lord of the universe.
Vishva Atman.
O soul of the universe. Vishva Murte. O personality of the universal form. Swakeshu. Unto my own kinsman. May my Sneha Pasham, tie of affection, Imam, this Chindi, cut off, Dritam, deep, Pandushu, for the Pandavas, Rishnishu, for the Rishnis
also.
O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vishnis. So this is, I'd say, a difficult verse. Because we're wondering, why is Kunti praying like this? Why is she saying to Krishna, please cut the rope of affection for the Pandavas and the Rishnis? So what question do you immediately have? What questions do you immediately have on hearing this verse?
What is threatened in her in this relations?
Hmm. Yeah, what's wrong with her relationships? What threat is there?
Yeah.
What's undesirable about it that she wants it cut? What other questions do we have on hearing this verse?
How does she want to cut it?
How does she want to cut it? What would it mean for it to be cut? How would her behavior change? What would that mean? Other questions. I'd say this is one of the most difficult verses in the Bhagavatam. This
actually her goal, what she wants.
What does she want? Okay.
What does she want?
Because she's saying what she doesn't want.
Yeah.
Or what does she want? Some other questions that come up when we hear this verse. How can we cut our attachments? Okay. Anything else we're wondering about this? Why she's asking this?
Like how to be attached and care really for other person if that feeling what she has, she wants to cut. What is then the real feeling for others?
What should be what real? How can we have real feeling for others? Right. We're making the assumption that she's not asking, okay, I don't want to have any affection. I mean, if we think about a society where nobody has any affection, that doesn't sound very attractive. And if you don't have any affection for your own family members, how are you going to have affection for anybody? It sounds pretty scary. Why would someone be asking God, let me not have affection for my family members?
And they're devotees.
They're devotees.
So why?
And they're pure devotees. They're not just ordinary devotees. The Pandavas and the Vishnis are families of pure devotees. And
so much things together, so many different situations they came through.
Oh, they went through so much together. So at this point, she's gone through so much with both the Vishnis and the Pandavas. But we're told that we should be attached to devotees. We're told that we should have a tie of affection for devotees. So why is she asking to cut a tie of affection for devotees? Now, I should also say that, before I read the purport, that I've seen in ISKCON, I hope the battery makes it. It's not going to make it. The battery's not going to make it. Battery, something wrong with the battery. I really need new batteries.
Yeah.
I could plug myself in. I don't have a plug for this anymore.
So we didn't give you yesterday.
No, you didn't.
Because you said you want to try the, or what happened? Because we had it.
I already tried these, and I said I wanted to, and you never gave them to me, and this one's going to die.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can give you now. You can try. Huh?
Are they charged? You give me something
so.
That's charged? This is definitely going to die. So I've seen that over the years in ISKCON that there's been a shift in how we perceived affection between devotees and how we perceive family affection. There's been changes. So in the very, very early days of ISKCON, we thought of ourselves and ISKCON as one family. It was which is very normal in a small new organization of any kind. But we saw each other as, so we're going to try some, do you have some?
Yeah.
Are they charged?
Because we don't use them, now nothing is used anymore with batteries. We have all, everything is,
directed. But so,
so do these have a charge in them? You don't know.
We didn't use them for a month. Maybe if you want to try, I don't know. Or maybe we can try after.
We are recording this.
Hmm?
So we are recording this.
Everything.
So you could give me a copy?
Yeah. We can try after.
Okay. Make sure that I get a copy. Okay. Because this is going to last another 10, 15 minutes. So in the beginning, it was very much a family atmosphere, and it was very much, I'd say that we were very much encouraged to have affection for one another. And then starting in about 1975, there were many devotees who started using verses like this, and many others, to preach against any kind of family feeling or any kind of really feeling for each other. And there was a period of many years, and it hasn't entirely stopped. definitely has not entirely stopped, where there was very strong preaching against any kind of family affection. I mean, it was so strong that at that time I was already a wife and mother, that it was very difficult for those of us who had families. I mean, we were certainly encouraged to cut off our tie of affection for our parents, because in most of us who joined ISKCON when Prabhupada was on the planet were young people who were still living with their parents, or still their parents were still living, had still some connections with their parents. Not that many older people joined ISKCON. Now we see a range of ages of people joining, but it wasn't so much like that then. It was more like age 15 to 30. And I think now that's still the majority, but then it was, you know, like 98%. So we were very much encouraged to cut off our tie of affection for our parents, for our brothers and sisters if they weren't devotees, for our husbands or wives if they weren't devotees. And sometimes even if they were interested but not very, very serious. I mean, I know of one current sannyasi in the movement whose wife was interested in Krishna consciousness, but she wasn't ready to make full-on dedication and move into the ashram. And so he left her. So that was very common. Not only common, but it was very strongly encouraged. And then even if you were married to another devotee in the movement, we were very much encouraged to even walk away from those relationships. So many people, after they were married, maybe 6 months or a year or a year and a half, I mean, many of our current sannyasis and gurus were married for a brief period of time. They were married, maybe they had a child, and then they were told, no, just leave your family, cut off your tie of affection. And for some people that worked, and for other people it definitely didn't work. They later went back to their husband or wife, or they found somebody else, or something like that. And that preaching in that mood, it still exists in ISKCON, in certain places and among certain people. It definitely is still there. It definitely has not gone away. And at the same time, there has been another kind of wave entered into ISKCON, and that is family affection is good and wonderful, and we should have a lot more of it. And there's now large groups of devotees who preach that family affection is going to help you in your Krishna consciousness. And they're encouraging it as part of spiritual life. Have you all heard all these different points of view? To what extent do you hear all these things here in Croatia? Not so much. Do you hear both things? What's the prominent preaching here?
Fighting between devotees.
Just fighting.
Politics.
Fighting in politics.
You don't need to hear some philosophical,
nothing philosophical.
Because there is always someone.
I see.
Yeah, no time for it.
No time for philosophical discussion because we're too busy fighting. Okay.
We are already a family.
You're already a real family. Yes. Okay. All right. So Croatia is such a family that we're just having family disputes all the time. I see. Okay, well, we don't find the Kunti saying, Krishna, I'd like to fight with my family members more. That's not her prayer. Okay, so keeping in mind those questions and this history of how this sort of verse has been interpreted in ISKCON, I wanted to go through that first before we read Srila Prabhupada's purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest from the Lord. But the householders are sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord, being bound by the tie of family affection. So can we think of instances of this when pure devotees ask something from the Lord out of obligation because of the ties of family affection?
Sudama and his wife.
Okay, Sudama. Of course, Sudama didn't actually ask anything from Krishna.
Yeah, but the wife. She asked because of him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the wife, who was also a great devotee of the Lord, she felt that it was her duty to make sure, because she saw her husband was so skinny and sickly,
yeah,
And she thought, it's my duty that Krishna has to be asked to help my husband. So she didn't ask directly, but she felt that it was her duty. It's interesting, when Prabhupada was very, very ill at the end, he said that it was our duty as disciples to pray for his recovery. That was our duty. Okay. Any other instances?
Dhruva Maharaj, when he was going home, he asked for his
mother. He asked for his mother. Dhruva Maharaj, yes. Some other examples.
Tukaram.
Asking for his wife.
Yeah. And children, yeah.
Wife and children. Other examples.
Yudhishthira, when he went with this dog, he wanted
to go. Yudhishthira, who cared about the dog, and because the dog was following, I have some obligation to care about the dog. I think about Uttara. Who did Uttara pray for?
To be saved.
No, she didn't pray to be saved.
No, for Pariksha to be saved.
For her child, for Pariksha to be saved.
Yeah.
She said, my dear Lord, you can. If the Brahmastra is going to kill me, that's okay, but let it not kill my child. Please save my child.
Rav Maharaj is praying for the fools.
For his father.
For his father and for the fools.
The fools in general, Lord. But he specifically prayed for his father. Yeah. So, we have many instances like this, where devotees will pray, pure devotees, or at the time of the... where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed his form as Vishnu. So, and the devotees were, many of them were praying for their family members. They were usually praying that they get pure devotional service, but still they were particularly praying for their family members. That's natural. You know, how many of us are going to go to Krishna and pray that, you know, Mr. Smith living in Kansas gets pure devotional service? Because we don't know Mr. Smith living in Kansas. We don't have any affection. I mean, we might go there on a book distribution party, in a Harinam party, and try to give him pure devotional service. And then if we meet him, we might pray to Krishna, please give him pure devotional service. But we're generally not praying like that. But we might pray that our mother or father, right? Have you ever prayed like that? Oh, please, Krishna, help my mother become a devotee. Mm-hmm. Or help my brother become a devotee. You know, or my child, or whatever. Right? That's natural. That we're especially going to ask Krishna for favors for the people to whom we're attached. And in fact, Lord Nrisingadev told Prahlad Maharaj, now you don't need to pray for your father because...
So many generations,
different numbers are given in different places. I don't remember the number given. I think it's 14.
14, yeah.
I think it's 14. But sometimes it says 21 at different numbers.
Sometimes 7.
Yeah. Anyway, there's so many generations of the family of a pure devotee are already liberated. And there's a purport where Prabhupada explains in that story of Nrisingadev, why do the relatives of a pure devotee become liberated? Do you know why?
Because of affection.
Because of affection.
How are these so many generations?
Yes, because if you have affection for a devotee, so Prabhupada says that all these generations can't possibly mean all this lifetime. And his reason is because of affection. He said, we know our parents. Most of us know our parents. Some people don't. Most of us know our grandparents. And I only had one grandparent living when I was born. But most of us know our grandparents. We may know up to our great-grandparents, but very, very few of us know much beyond our great-grandparents. Very few people know their great-great-grandparents. And we certainly don't know our great-great-great-grandparents. How many of you here know the names of your great-great-grandparents? You know two of them?
No, I know, because...
All of them?
Yeah, mostly, yeah. Because I was eager, you know, to...
You were studying the family
tree. Yeah, the tree, yeah.
So you're the only one. And you had to make a special study.
Yeah.
So, of course, this means that our great-great-grandchildren won't even know our names. That's how important we'll be. But so Prabhupada said, because we don't know past our great or great-great-grandparents, therefore only that level can be liberated, because there's only affection up to that level. He said, therefore, this must apply to other lifetimes. So when we say 14 generations, some of that must apply to other lifetimes. Because I only have affection maybe up to my great-grandparents, maybe, and down to my great-grandchildren, but not past that. Like right now I have grandchildren, so if I live another, 10, 20 years, I'll probably have great-grandchildren. But it's not likely that I'll live long enough to have great-great-grandchildren. So my great-great-grandchildren will not know me. And even my great-grandchildren may not know me. So only that way, backwards and forwards. Which is interesting because it means that in a previous life, before a person became a devotee at all, possibly, those generations become liberated. But the point is the generations become liberated due to affection. If you have affection and attachment for a pure devotee, you become liberated. And this was told by Srila Prabhupada to my father. That when we met Srila Prabhupada in 1974, my father said, I'm coming to the temple not to see Krishna, but to see my daughter and son-in-law. Is that okay? And Prabhupada said, yes. They are loving Krishna, and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. Which told me that it was a good idea that my family remained affectionate to me. That if I kept in Krishna consciousness and they remained affectionate, that would be good for them. But the problem is, as Prabhupada's pointing out here, that because of family affection, we tend to go to Krishna to ask for things. And the devotee feels embarrassed to ask Krishna for anything. Basically, all we want to ask Krishna is, how can I serve you? It's embarrassing when we have to go to Krishna to ask for things. It's embarrassing to go to Krishna and say, well, I know I'm just supposed to ask for service, but I really want some money. Can you help me out? And we tend to go to Krishna for family members. If your family member is sick, you'll go to Krishna. Krishna, please help my family member. It's natural to do that. And Kunti was ashamed of this, and she said, I don't want to ask you for anything anymore. So Prabhupada says here, Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and therefore she prayed to the Lord to cut off the affectionate tie from her own kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. This is the first reason. The Pandavas are her own sons, and the Vrishnis are the members of her paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both families. Both the families required the Lord's help because both were dependent devotees of the Lord. Now, this is Prabhupada's giving her second reason. Srimati Kunti Devi wished Sri Krishna to remain with her sons, the Pandavas, but by his doing so, her paternal house would be bereft of the benefit. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. So Krishna generally was staying in Dwarka. But sometimes he would go to Hastinapur, Indraprastha, to visit the Pandavas. Anyway, when he'd go, it wasn't like nowadays, where you get on an airplane. And one time I traveled from America to India for only 5 days for a meeting, which was a very odd thing to do. As soon as I got accustomed to the fact that I was in India, I wasn't there anymore. I know of business people who travel to distant countries for 2 days for a meeting and then go home. So in those days, it wasn't like that. When Krishna traveled to Dwarka, you traveled by chariot and you usually stay for some time. So, to Indraprastha or Hastinapur. And especially if he traveled with his family members. When Krishna traveled with his family members for Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Yajna, so he had a big family. Nowadays we think a big family is one wife and, more than four children is a big family. And if you brought your aunts and your uncles and, he had 16,108 wives. And each wife had 10 children. That's 160,000 children. And then there were teachers for the children. In those days, they didn't have washing machines, so you brought your laundry people with you and your cleaners with you. So all the servants came. And then it wasn't just Krishna's immediate family, but also, Anyone know how many brothers and sisters Krishna had?
One
100. No, he had 100. Because Vasudev had, sometimes it said 16 wives, sometimes 18 wives. So Vasudev had 100 children. So then Krishna had, you know, 99 brothers and sisters. And then their families. And then his aunts and uncles. You know, plus people who were cousins and more distant relationships and the other members of Dwarka who weren't immediate family. So when Krishna went to Hastinapur or Indraprastha for the Rajasriya Yajna, there was a lot of people that went. You know, we're talking about several major cities worth of people that went, and they were traveling by ox cart and chariot and palanquin, and they're crossing over rivers. So it was a big thing. You know, probably took a couple months to move all those people. You'd have to set up camp, you know, on the way. So then once you get there, you're not just going to stay for 5 days. You're going to stay for a long time. And when Krishna got to Indraprastha, after the Rajasriya Yajna, he sent a lot of the family back. He stayed just with some members of the family. And he'd also come to Hastinapur, of course, for other reasons. When the Pandavas were in exile, this is not when Kunti was with them, when the Pandavas were in exile after the gambling match. So we know there was one time when Duryodhan thought that he would destroy the Pandavas by sending Durvasa Muni. You know that story? Durvasa Muni had come to his Hastinapur. Durvasa Muni is a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, and Durvasa means bad face. Or it can also mean bad clothes. So sometimes they say it means he traveled naked. But anyway, he was a very temperamental person. And somehow or other Duryodhan had pleased him. And Durvasa had said, what would you like me to do? And he said, oh, you know, you've given me so many benedictions, why don't you give the Pandavas some benedictions too? And he knew that when the Pandavas went to the forest, Draupadi was given a special pot that would supply unlimited food until she ate. So she would eat the last in the day. She ate once a day and only in the evening. She was a very austere lady. So he said, you should go visit the Pandavas after Draupadi's eaten. Because he knew that then the Pandavas were in the forest. How are you going to prepare a meal? Durvasa had, sometimes it says 10,000 and sometimes said 60,000 disciples that he would travel with. That's a lot of people. So how are you going to feed 10,000 people or 60,000 people? You know, you can do it if you're a king in a palace and you've got a big kitchen with a lot of servants, but how are you going to do it in the forest? You can't. Unless you have this magic pot. But the magic pot wouldn't work anymore after Draupadi had eaten. So Duryodhan arranged like this. And when Durvasa came with his 10,000 or 60,000 disciples, Draupadi had already eaten. Pandavas didn't know what to do. Thankfully, Durvasa said, first we'll take a bath. That's the custom when you travel. First you bathe before you eat. So they went to take a bath. And Draupadi started crying. And she started crying for Krishna. And Krishna appeared. There he was. That's how close he was to the Pandavas. And he came and he said, Draupadi, I'm hungry. And she's crying. And she said, but that's my whole problem, Lord. I can't feed anybody anymore. I can't feed you either. I've already eaten. And he said, well, let me see if there's something left. So he looked in the pot and there was a little grain of rice or a little piece of a vegetable. And he ate that. And as soon as he ate that, then everybody was satisfied. Why? Because he's Vishvatman, as Kunti's saying here. He's the soul of souls. He's the super soul. So when he's satisfied, like we're the super soul of this body. There's all these little cells in our bodies that are souls. And we're the super soul of the body. Krishna's the super soul of the universe. So when he ate, Durvasa and everybody else also felt satisfied. And just like you don't want to be embarrassed to feed, to not have any food for guests, you don't want to be embarrassed to not have any hunger when you are a guest. Sometimes that's a problem if you go preaching at 4 home programs in a day, you know. People make this big meal and you can't eat. Anyway, my point is whenever the Pandavas were in danger, Krishna would show up. And when he came, then he wasn't back in Dwarka anymore. He was often just coming to help the Pandavas, and then he wasn't in Dwarka. But who was in Dwarka? The Vrishnis. And Kunti's also related to the Vrishnis. She's the sister of Vasudev. So when Krishna's with her sons, the Pandavas, then he's not with her father or brother family in Dwarka. And it's saying here this perplexed her mind. It troubled her mind. She doesn't want to be partial to either. She's feeling, I'm partial to my sons. I'm asking Krishna to help my sons. But as soon as I ask Krishna to help my sons, then he has to be away from my brother. So better I don't have any affection for any of them. Let Krishna just do whatever he wants. And I won't be pushing Krishna to do one thing to favor one part of my family over another. So I'll go on reading the purport. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. So this is such an important point. The typical example is the band of six Goswamis who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belong to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes. But for the benefit of the massive population, they left their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off family affection means to broaden the fields of activities. So Prabhupada's saying here that what you do is you start considering that the whole world is your family. That cutting off the tie of family affection doesn't mean, as Prabhupada will speak in the next purport. In the next purport he says that you don't want complete negation of the finer elements like affection for someone else. That Prabhupada's saying Kunti is not asking here to be hard-hearted. That what she's asking is to love everybody as if they're family. To not have special affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. That's less, that's more than what she has for everyone else. We think about Vasudev Dat. So it's not unusual for a person to be anxious or willing to suffer for the sake of benefiting their family members. Isn't that common? Don't people commonly sacrifice so a family member will be happy?
Yeah.
They'll give up their own happiness so a family member can be happy. That's extremely common. In fact, we could say that's almost the definition of a family. The mother with the and the father with the young, but especially I think the mother with the young children. So the baby will be happy. The mother gives up what she wants to do and she's just rocking the baby. You know, those of you who are not mothers. So you just think about that for a minute. Would you spend 5 hours a day just holding someone and rocking somebody and not doing what you wanted to do? So that's what a mother does. You know, she wants to sleep and she gets up in the middle of the night to take care of her baby over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. She wants to go someplace and the baby's crying or the baby's tired and she doesn't go where she wants to go. So she's accepting some pain for the benefit of her child. And of course, husbands do this for their wives and wives do this for their husbands. You know, the man wants to go out and be with his friends and instead he stays home and cleans out the garage for the benefit of his wife. Or the working hard so your children can go to college. Instead of people doing what they want to do, they take an extra job and they work so hard so their children can get an education. So that's normal within a family. It's expected within a family. And if people see a greater family, like we were giving this example of military, people who are willing to become a lifetime cripple for the sake of the country. Right? People go off to war, and they know that if you go off to war, you may end up in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. You may lose your leg, you may lose your arms, you may lose your hearing, you may lose your eyes. And they're willing to sacrifice that for the sake of the country. So Vasudev Dat was willing to sacrifice for the sake of all living entities. He had that mood of the family, that mood of the citizen, for everyone. He said, I'm willing to take the reactions, the sinful reactions of every living entity in this universe so that they can be free and they can attain spiritual perfection. So he had that mood of the mother or the brother or the husband or the citizen for everyone. So Prabhupada says that's what cutting off the tie of family affection really means. It means instead of thinking, as Arjuna was saying on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Swajanan, these are my men. You know, I'm willing to sacrifice for my child, but I'm not willing to sacrifice for your child or you. I'm only willing to sacrifice for my family. Other people, who cares? So Prabhupada says like this, to cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. And then he says, without doing this, no one can be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. So in order to be a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord, we have to have affection for all living entities. Now, of course, we may have special responsibility for some living entities. But we should have affection for all living entities. Now Prabhupada is going to give an example. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. What was the example?
Ramachandra.
Sri Ramachandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife to manifest the qualities of an ideal king. Now, did Ramachandra not care about Sita anymore? Was he hard-hearted? This behavior of Ramachandra with Sita is very confusing for most people. You all know the story? So after Lord Ramachandra going to war to win back Sita from Ravana, so much sacrifice and difficulty. When they were there as king and queen, when Sita was being criticized, he said, okay, I have to renounce you. You have to go to the forest. I mean, it would be nice if modern politicians had such an example. I remember when Bill Clinton in America, President Clinton, was being accused of having an illicit affair. He didn't even step down. So when the public is criticizing them personally, they don't step down. What to speak if there's a scandal with a family member? They don't renounce the family member. So because people were suggesting, Sita had no scandal, but because people were suggesting that Sita had a scandal, he said, anybody who looks like they've had a scandal, they can't stay in a position of leadership. Honestly, we have this problem also in ISKCON, that sometimes people are involved in a scandal and they won't step down. They say, no, I want to keep my position. Even if I've done something abominable, everybody should still respect me as a leader, and it causes a lot of problems. So Ramachandra showed that the leaders have to have such a sterling example that they have to be willing even to separate themselves from their most dear family members if those people are going to prove to be an embarrassment and make it difficult for the people to follow. Because you can't follow a leader unless you have trust in them. Just like yesterday, Mohan Prabhu gave some introduction for me, which thankfully I couldn't understand because it wasn't in English. But I thought about, why do we introduce a speaker? What's the purpose of introducing a speaker? So the people trust them. Why should I listen to somebody if they don't know what they're talking about? And sometimes devotees, in the name of humility, will get up and say, I'm not qualified to speak. Well, you know what? If you're not qualified to speak, you shouldn't speak. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, if you want to wear a veil, you don't dance. If you've gotten up on the stage to dance, you have to take off your veil. You can't say, well, I'm going to be a leader, but I'm not qualified to be a leader. Of course, none of us are qualified, but we're qualified by the grace of Guru and Krishna. So leader means has to be qualified. Otherwise, why is anybody going to follow? And qualified means there shouldn't even be a question. You not only have to look, you have to be good, but you also have to look good. So Sita was good, but didn't look good. So Ramachandra said, no, this can't be there as a leader. So it's such an extreme example. Ramachandra is still criticized for this. You know this, don't you? Even devotees will sometimes criticize Lord Ramachandra for sending away Sita. Even Lakshman criticized Lord Ramachandra for sending away Sita. And for putting Sita through the fire test. And he said, next life I'm going to be the older brother, so I don't have to listen to you and build a fire and take Sita to the forest. Because in Vedic times, the younger brother had to be obedient. And he said, next time I'm not going to listen to it. Of course, you know what Krishna did to make up for this as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave a deity of himself to Vishnupriya and he went to the forest. Rather than as Ram kept the deity of Sita and sent her to the forest. Okay, we'll continue with the purport. Such personalities as a brahmana, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact. So Kunti Devi was a queen and a queen mother. She wasn't just an ordinary citizen. And being weak, she prayed to be free from such bondage of family affection. So now we have three reasons why Kunti Devi is asking this prayer. Do you remember the reasons? What's the three reasons? She wants to develop affection for everybody. Why particularly? Because she's a?
Particularly because she doesn't want to only be affected to her family.
But why does she see that she has to have affection for everybody?
She's a queen.
She's a queen. As a political leader, it's not appropriate for her to have special affection for her own family. So that's one reason. Another reason.
Krishna is switching when she's praying to Pandavas.
Yes, because Krishna has to go back and forth and she can't figure out who to pray for. Should I pray that Krishna comes sees the Pandavas or should I pray that Krishna is with the Rishnis? And she's confused about which one of her families to pray for, so she'd rather not have special affection for either one of them. And third reason. The first one given. You've gone backwards. That then she might have to ask the Lord for special favors for her family members and that she finds that embarrassing. Mm. Awkward. Ashamed. She feels ashamed to go to the Lord. Because we might not go to the Lord for ourselves. Maybe if I'm dying of cancer, I won't ask Krishna to cure me. But if my son's dying of cancer, then I feel obliged. I feel I'm supposed to go to Krishna and ask him to cure my son. So she feels ashamed that sometimes she's had to ask, Krishna, please save us. Of course, Kunti also says, you know, I'm very glad for all those catastrophes because then I get a chance to ask you to come and then you came. Yeah. Give me more catastrophes, so I'll have an excuse to ask you to come. Okay, we'll finish the purport. We said that, Prabhupada says here that she felt that she was too weak to cut off the tie by herself. That she asked Krishna, you cut this tie. Sneha pasam chindi. Chindi, you cut this tie of affection. Because I can't do it myself. Well, this is why ask Krishna, Prabhupada says here. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe or the Lord of the universal mind. The Lord of the universal mind. Indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. So all of us have different attachments that we see are impediments in our Krishna consciousness. But we also may see that we can't get rid of these impediments by ourselves, isn't it? That we try and 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 we fail. Then we go to Krishna. We say, Krishna, you please remove this. Actually, only Krishna can remove. Shinvitam swakata Krishna punya shavana kirtanam. Vidyantasta abhadrani vidyinoti sarichuta. The abhadrani, the inauspicious things in the heart. Krishna can't get rid of them. Actually, we can't get rid of them. But We need to ask to get rid of them. We need to want to get rid of them. Then Prabhupada says here, therefore it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of his special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. So if we have an attachment, just like I was giving the example of my granddaughter who didn't want to take this medicine, and my son had to use some force, she wouldn't do it voluntarily. I mean, she was complaining, my tooth hurts, my tooth hurts, my tooth hurts. But then she refused to take the medicine. So sometimes we do that. Sometimes we go to Krishna and say, Krishna, I'm suffering. I'm suffering. I'm suffering. I'm suffering. I'm suffering. And Krishna is telling us, well, you're suffering because of this particular attachment. You need to break it. No, I don't want to break it. It'll hurt if I break it. And then sometimes, if that persists, that we keep saying, Krishna, I want pure devotional service. I really want pure devotional service, but I'm not willing to break this particular attachment that I have. Then sometimes Krishna will put us in a circumstance where it's very difficult to continue that attachment. We won't say absolutely forced, because we always have free will. But Krishna will put us in a circumstance where that attachment becomes almost inevitable to break. We'll be attached to some person, and that person will show us, say, a not very nice side. And our affection will be cut. And there'll be some situation. I give the example, you know, like if Krishna, like you have a picture of Krishna over there. So Krishna's calling, and he's saying, come here, come here. And I go, okay, well, I'll come there sometime. And he's calling. And then Krishna starts making your seat hot. And you're still saying, I'll come. Yeah. And then he gets it so hot, you can jump out of your seat. So if we don't respond to this, then sometimes it becomes this, to help us do what it is that we say we want to do. We're saying, I want pure devotional service. So sometimes, like any good coach or teacher or parent, gives us a push. So Ata Vishveshva Vishvatman Vishvamurte Swakeshume Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi Dridham Pandu Shu Vishnishu. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please therefore sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vishnis. So we have 2 minutes for questions. Yes. I'll take it first. Yes.
Is it actually Kunti speaking only about pure devotional service?
So, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes we say that many devotees are really inspired by prayers of King Kunti.
Yes.
Because of the Prabhupada also gave so much classes on that word, in that chapter, and she says very often that. Because we don't like problems and purifications in our lives, but we are inspired because she is praying, give me problems. Why? Because in this way we were thinking, when I was sick, I was every day praying to Krishna, oh Krishna, 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 when you will help me. And then I became healthy, and then I forget to pray so much. So then I was thinking, what is better for me, to be sick or be healthy? Because when I'm sick, I'm thinking more about Krishna. So she was also, give me problems, I will think also about you. But then she says, it's not good to pray to you to ask something. So how does this understand? She wants problems so that she can think on him, please help me. And then she doesn't want to pray, please help me. So how to understand these two things?
It's just like the thing that she's the eternal family member of the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. That's an eternal relationship. That's a real relationship. Why would she want to cut off her real relationships? It's a similar question. So both things are there. Our relationships with our families in this life are not, they're not our eternal relationships. But these are her eternal relationships. Why would she want to cut off that affection? Have special cut off her special affection? Say the same thing. Prabhupada said that we should be aspiring to join Krishna's family. So why is Kunti both not wanting to ask the Lord for anything and yet looking for opportunities where she will ask the Lord for something? But she also wants to see him. You see this kind of conflict in the devotees all the time. That the devotees, they want to be with Krishna. You think about it at Kurukshetra, where the residents of Vrindavan, they wanted to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. But why? Because they know that Krishna is the happiest in Vrindavan. They know how much Krishna loves it in Vrindavan. They want to bring him back to his favorite place.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to understand. Should we pray for ourselves, Krishna help or not? Because Prabhupada says in Devas Govardhana Lila, they didn't have no one else to pray, please help. They prayed to Krishna, please help us.
Yes.
And sometimes very pure advanced devotees say, it's not good to pray, Krishna help me.
Well,
so
it's interesting. It's interesting in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, on the Anya Bilasita Shunyam Gyana Karma Vanavritam Anukulena Krishna Nushilanam Bhakti Rutama. The definition of pure devotional service is Anya Bilasita Shunyam. So, Shunya means zero. And means all material desires should be zero. But in the commentary of Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, they make the point that anya bilasita, when you add the anla bilasita, it means not that you can never say, Krishna, save me. They say that, you know, if your life is in danger and you say, Krishna, help, that's not a material desire. It's not in the category of material desire. And by the way, Krishna likes it.
Help us.
You're a man. Men want to be heroes. Right? I mean, even women want to be heroes, but especially men want to be heroes. Women more want to be saved. I mean, the cartoons that I used to watch as a kid where the bad guy ties up the woman on the train tracks.
Yeah.
Do you remember those cartoons?
Yeah.
The good guy comes along and unties her just in time, right before the train gets her, you know. I remember Bir Krishna Maharaj saying once in a class that when he was a young boy, young man, that he used to fantasize about saving women from burning buildings. That comes from God. God's the Purusha. We're all Prakriti. He likes playing the hero. He enjoys it. Isn't it pleasurable being a hero?
Yeah.
Of course. So he likes that. And if the devotees just said, yeah, it's raining, Krishna, everything's flooded, that's cool. I don't really care if you save me or not. You know, it's okay if I drown. That's no fun. What's the fun of saving somebody like that? It's not enjoyable. Well, thanks for saving me, Krishna. But if you didn't save me, I mean, that would be cool too. I mean,
anyway.
There's no rasa in that. Like, Krishna, save me! My God, everything's flooded and I'm cold. Then he likes to save you. It's fun.
He likes fun.
That's what it's all about. That's what the absolute truth is all about. It's about fun and adventures. I mean, here it's perverted, but that's... Prabhupada says in the story of Jambavan that Krishna has all the instincts of a human being. He likes to save his devotees. And the devotees enjoy being saved by Krishna. They like Krishna playing the harp. That's why the cowherd boys went in Agassara's mouth. You know? Krishna didn't want the cowherd boys to go into Agassara's mouth. Why would you want your friends to go into the mouth of a demon? That wasn't Krishna's desire. It was the desire of the devotees. They thought, oh, well, let's give Krishna a chance to play hero again. And the desires of the devotees are stronger. Krishna's Leela Shakti favors the devotees' desires over Krishna's desires. That's what the Acharyas say in the commentary. And Krishna did enjoy saving his devotees. It gave him pleasure, and therefore it gave his devotees pleasure. You know, you can apply logic to things like tables and cars, but you can't really apply logic to people. People are not entirely logical. If they were, they wouldn't be people. They'd be things. We're talking about, you know, our philosophy is very personal. It's not just that we say God is a person. We really mean that he's a person. And that we're all people. And as people, we have sometimes contradictory desires. Don't you have contradictory desires? None, huh? 99% of them are contradictory. You want different things. Well, that was part of Kunti's problem. She wanted Krishna to be with the Rishnis, and she wanted Krishna to be with the Pandavas. And she's saying, I don't know what to do about this problem. Please help me. Even Krishna has contradictory desires. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Mother Yasoda wants to tie him up. So he wants to please his mother, but he wants to go play with his friends. He doesn't want to be tied up. So for a long time, he's just not letting her tie him up because he wants to go play. And after she becomes exhausted and frustrated, he says, okay, you can tie me up. Well, that's what it means to be a person. Prabhupada wrote in a letter to a Atreya Rishi, don't think there's some sort of utopia. He said, even in the spiritual world, there's faults. Like I burned my sari, someone said, why don't you wear your sari inside out now? So the gopis actually put on their saris inside out and upside down. You know, like this part is supposed to go on the top. They put it on the bottom. Sometimes you see somebody wearing a sari like that, and the threads are sticking out. Put your sari on upside down and inside out. That's a fault. Of course, sometimes they make it as a fashion to wear have clothes that look like they're inside out. But that's the crazy fashions. Nowadays they make fashions where your clothes look torn and old, and you spend a lot of money to look like you're a street bum. But at least when I was growing up, you weren't supposed to go out in public unless you were properly dressed. That was how I was raised. I was raised that you didn't wear your clothes inside out. But the gopis put their clothes inside out and upside down. They put only one earring in. You know, they had makeup just one eye. Those are faults, right? Aren't those faults? Wouldn't we call those mistakes? If you showed up with makeup and just one eye and one earring and your clothes inside out, we'd say, oh, you made a mistake. And one time Krishna was looking at Radharani and he started trying to milk a bull instead of a cow. Right? So they're people. And that's charming. Krishna actually likes it when the gopis show up all mismatched, because it shows how much love they have for him. Normally, young girls aren't going to go out of their house unless they look nice. Maybe young boys would, but not young girls. But it's so much love for Krishna. That's contradictory. If a girl's going to see her beloved boy, she's going to look nice. She's not going to go out mismatched, dressed, and with makeup on one side of her face. What? Come on. What 14, 15-year-old girl is going to go meet her boyfriend looking like that? Nobody. but they had so much love. So that's also contradictory, isn't it? You know, there's, when you're talking about people and you're talking about love, logic is going to only take you so far. People are not totally logical, and love is certainly not logical. Love has nothing to do with logic. Why does somebody love somebody else? Can they explain it? If you've loved somebody, can you explain why you love them? With logic? That would be pretty sad. If you have a logical, mathematical analysis of why you love someone. Well, I love them because their eyes are this many inches apart, and I mean, it just... Because 97% of the time they cook 10% of what I want. I mean, how can you quantify love? I mean, the love the devotees have for Krishna, the pure devotees, doesn't really make any sense. He leaves them. He breaks their heart. In the middle of the Rasa dance, and he walks away. You're with your best friend, and you know, you're going out to a park, and you're having a good time, and all of a sudden they just disappear for a few hours without saying anything. You just look around, they're just gone. Where'd you go? I thought we were here at the park to be together. He's just gone. And then he goes to Mathura and he said, I'll be right back. Bye, I'll be right back. He doesn't come back. And he's all powerful, but he lets Indra flood Vrindavan. He doesn't just stop it. He lets Shalva destroy Dwarka. He lets the Pandavas be exiled. He lets Hiranyakashipu torture Prahlad. And the devotees still love him. It says in Bhaktivinoda Sindhu that although Abhimanyu was killed practically in Krishna's presence, Subhadra's love for Krishna didn't change even slightly. So is that logical? If you want to try to analyze it. You can't. It's love. So because of the strange nature of love, many people try to give it up. Hey? Many people say, I'm not going to love anybody anymore. This is much too much trouble. This love business. But that's our nature as a soul. Of course, love in this material world is a lot of trouble, because it's not actually love. But so, how much can you analyze Kunti's love? Okay. Is that all right? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Well, made it.